Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
On this episode, I'm joined by one of the best in the business, one of rugby's greats. He's a wallaby great. It's the wonderful, powerful Michael Hooper.
This is the Big Jim Show.
No Wanganita Wase is off to the NRL.
He's had enough of rugby.
It's time for him to rebel. It's Eddie's fault.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
But you can't blame Eddie.
It's Eddie's fault.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
But you can't blame Eddie. Cause rugby will live on and on. Maggie Hooper knows what's going on. And if Hooper knows what's going on, the Wallabies will be strong.
And they'll live on.
Right then, Hoops, how are we, mate? How is Hong Kong? I know how it is, but what's your view on the place?
Mate, we got here Sunday. It's now Tuesday. I can't tell you much. Like, you're going to have to tell everyone more because, mate, it's humid. It's hot. Everything's massive. Like, we're in a really good place. The food's amazing, the place we're staying. So not ideal for sevens, mate. You're just eating and eating pre this looming 3 days we've got coming up. So, mate, we're putting a dent on the sushi and dumplings, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you can with the amount of training that you have to put into transition. Let's call it transition. I don't know what they call transition in Australia. It's very different here. But in rugby terms of transition, you'll be allowed. What kind of shape are you in from where you were back in your glory days and 15s?
The glory days, yeah, well behind me. No, it's probably about 3 or 4 kilos different. So not a huge amount, not really a huge amount. I played like anywhere between 95 and 98 kilos in test footy, and I'm under 95 now. But I'm not overly fussed on weight, mate. Playing guys here who are more like 70 kilos. So I've actually for once in my life got a bit of weight on in compared to some of the other teams. So that's nice. But no, the transition's been enjoyable, mate. Like it's all the really fun parts of rugby, you're running ball in hand. There's more space, as you know, like plenty more space all the time on the field. A lot of one-on-one tackles. But within that, you're playing genuine athletes and the, you know, best skilled, hot-stepping, fittest guys. It's just a different ball game, man. So it's been a great challenge so far.
Yeah. Does it feel like a completely different game? I know you said it's a different ball game, but when you run around doing 15s at the level that you have for so many years, watching sevens, same style of ball, but does it feel like a different ball game? Are you in a different sport there? Are we going to see the great Michael Hooper of Australian 15s and the sevens? I know you've spoken about this, but and the reason why I say this, I'm kind of going on a bit waffling, but Anton Dupont, very different position. I get that. Very different skill set and fitness.
You know, is there going to be a difference in gameplay from my 15s to the 7s? I guess we'll know in a little bit of time, and I'll know even better in a week's time. I've had some good advice come from me from a couple of different angles, but one in particular was don't try and be a 7s player. So playing the 7s game, but my trying to bring my skill set to the game of sevens, I think is probably going to be a good place to start. There's 3 tournaments before the Olympics. Within that, there's heaps of weeks of training. You know, and I've only really had 4 or 5 weeks of proper full-time training now against our own sort of team and everything, of which very little of it's actually, you know, full live contact and all that sort of stuff. So that changes the demographic from it being just touch. You know, at training, there's as you know, mate, there's such a big difference between like getting your bodies in front to two-handed touch to then when things go live. the way the defense moves is completely different to what you'll see on a game. When you're a defender, you can't just approach a ball carrier just the same in the same way as you can when you know you've got to try and make a tackle and make an effective tackle with all this space around you. So, look, I think to simplify it for myself, this week, I think what DuPont did well in the last two tournaments, he just brought his skill set, you know, from 15s over to 7s and put it in that game. And that's a, even though, you know, my skill set and his skill set are completely different, I think the ideology behind it's probably sound in the sense that, okay, well, I'm not going to be a 7s player overnight, but what can I bring? And I'll try and go with that approach so far.
And what can you bring? Bit of hustle.
Yeah, I could bring some hustle, but, mate, everyone's fit.
Yeah, they're run away from game. You.
Mate, they're stupidly fit. And it's a different kind of fitness, like different kind of energy source. So, yeah, I had good meters in the legs in 15s, but this you're sort of running. You're never running below half pace. You're never walking. You're definitely not jogging and walking. You're always running and running sort of three-quarter pace. You're always involved in every phase of play. So, you know, 3 minutes can just blow you apart. And I think that's what we'll probably see timing-wise from me early on is smaller minutes in games, again, and drip feed in that way.
Yeah. How has DuPont been received on the circuit? Because I know it's quite a close-knit circuit, isn't it? You travel the world, right? That's part of the beauty of playing sevens is you get to do that. But you do it all together as teams and having a superstar like him, like yourself, transitioning across. How's he been received? Do you know?
I can only comment from what's been inside our camp, and our camp's been really impressed with some of the skill set. We played them in Vancouver, and he had a good game. Like, he had some really good involvements against us, and from, you know, some of our guys in here have watched a lot of sevens, and being, you know, we've got some really class players in our team and some experienced players who've been around a long time. Henry Hutchinson, Moz Longbottom, Nick Maloof, some of these sort of guys, they were impressed with what he brought. You know, he's got a great skill set. He's hard to tackle. He's strong. He's got a good rugby brain. So, yeah, he's going to be good whatever he takes on.
Yeah. What about the whole circus and the travel? What are the guys and the girls, because you travel together. And I mentioned the girls, the ladies, the women, the girls. But obviously Madison Levi and her crew, they look like when you look on Instagram, when you look at the kind of circus and the travelling, it looks wicked. It looks like a maybe not your age profile that fits with it, but if you're a youngster and you're single, it just looks like the best thing to be a part of. It's like a smaller version of the Formula One.
Yeah, much smaller version. Potentially you're not the same sort of money floating around. But we're staying in a cracking joint here. Like I mentioned earlier, the food that you can just get lost in. We were in Vancouver and LA a month ago. In a month, we'll be in Singapore. 2 months after that, Madrid, and then you get a chance at getting an Olympic medal. Like, as a personal thing, and for men and women, like, what an opportunity as a young person to see the world, to experience different culture, and to play sport, and then on a rugby level. Like, the improvement that you can make to your game, like, it should be a breeding ground for a lot of nations, I think, in terms of skill set. You learn how to work hard and you work hard. Your skill set, long passes, where you carry the ball, your one-on-one tackling all improve out of sight, and your communication has to be good. So they're like foundations for 15s footy. And I think it's, you know, while there is some really good veterans here on the circuit, should be utilised, I think, by nations that are a really good place to put certainly some young talent, and also, you know, I guess DuPont, myself, and, you know, we've seen Samu Kurevi come and have a go, and Sonny Bill, and, you know, some of these players. It's also a great way to circle back and to do some things maybe you haven't done. But, yeah, it is different, mate. Like, you are eating, you're eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner with the guys you're going to play against. And because it is over 3 days, like, the story and the narrative of each nation changes. So I didn't play in Vancouver and LA, but I got to see all this stuff as a non-player. And yeah, you are crossing paths against the team you're playing in the morning. And, you know, as 15s, as you know, like, God forbid staying in the same hotel as the opposition you're playing, you know, let alone seeing them on the street. There's that awkward, I don't know, when you, you know, players you don't know, but you've heard about. And it's that weird sort of acknowledgement of, I know who you are, but I'm not going to talk to you because we're meant to hate each other because we're about to play each other. Like the teams get along really well, and you know, or at least on a surface level. That's good. It's a great tournament and great competition for sure.
Yeah, it sounds wicked. I think it's grown more and more over the last few years, especially. There's cameras. I don't know if you've seen all the cameras, but there's talk of Netflix being involved as well with the travelling aspect, the culture, the different teams. Do you know what I mean? The history of the tournament, places like Hong Kong that's deep-rooted in sevens, and the Perth one was mega as well. But I think there's a real appetite to see the growth of the sevens. I know there is at World Rugby, but I just think I'm aligned with you in terms of I think it's a great breeding ground for unbelievable athletes. Like, you look at the athleticism that you need, and you'll know this because you're in it, but you're also a great athlete yourself. Like, it's another level of athleticism, isn't it? You look at all the players, they're all lean, they're all powerful, they're all quick. I'm trying to compare it to another sport, but you probably can't.
Certainly with the physicality aspect, I think it's, you know, having to make decisions or sporting decisions under serious fatigue. You know, and fit that within a team. Like I said earlier, it's a different energy source. So your heart rate's got to be redlining most of the time. Then you've got to throw a 20-meter ball. And then if that ball gets turned over, you're expected to chase and run to the other end. And then scrum and line out. And, you know, that's the thing with rugby that's so cool is there's so many different skills. So you got players who are traditional centers in 15s. You know, getting lifted in a restart, or they're, you know, being a prop in the scrum, but then they you know, filter out to the edges and attack like a winger. You know, so it is quite, you've got to be quite multitasked, and then also just super fit. And probably a difference I haven't mentioned is it's tournament to tournament, which is very different to a typical season. And you know all this, but I guess the punter may not, you know, you start with trials and then you get through 20 or 30 or 40 rounds up in Europe as you guys usually play. But here it's almost like pre-season, tournament, and then rest, and then pre-season, tournament, rest, and do it all again. And that's kind of the cycle of the year, rather than you build up in 15s, build up a big pre-season, and then just hammer and tong and hold on as long as you can to try and get a final, and week in, week out, a couple of buys here and there. So it's quite different in that matter, not to mention the sort of six games over 3 days of a weekend is unique too.
Yeah, sounds class, mate. And who's the team? So if it's the Wallabies, All Blacks, South Africa, in terms of the 15s, in the sevens, who does everyone speak about? Who's the one to beat?
The narrative now certainly seems to be that anyone's good on their day. If you looked at who's really been performing, the Argentinians have, they lost one game, I think, in the first four tournaments. So they lost, a semi-final, I think, in Dubai, and then went Dubai rather, and then Cape Town they won, Perth they won, and they've sort of been just amazing the last 18 months. Their ability to restart, and probably that's, you know, the restarts in sevens is so important because you score a try, you kick off. So the ability to score, then get the ball back and sort of double down on teams is pretty important. Because if you can maintain possession, usually you can come up with some points somewhere. They're great. Yeah, and then your typical crew, mate, they're always there. Everyone seems to be rock solid on their day.
Fiji? That's who I just think. I'm a bit old school. So I'm like sevens, Fiji. That's Serevi. That's how old I am. I'm old school going back.
Well, mate, this is the thing. That's my assumption too. And these guys are built to play sevens and built to play rugby, the Fijians. And they're silent assassins. They're the loveliest people ever. And then they can just murder you on the footy field. We play them round one over here, I think this Friday, which will be class. Looking forward to hopefully making a run on there. No, you're right in thinking that. They are, they've had a bit of a coaching change going into this tournament. The athletes all over the park. They've won the two gold medals when they've been since rugby's been in the Olympics. They expect to be there or thereabouts, and when I say they're winning tournaments or in the final, so they're hungry to succeed.
What about you, Hoops? What's the incentive? Why are you there? It's great that you are there, but you've got so many miles in the legs, a lot of pressure, captain in your country. Why are you doing it?
I think it's exciting. Well, I don't think. It is an exciting challenge. I have had a lot of time in the saddle in 15s and loved every bit of it and hated some parts of it. And so this presented a unique opportunity to try something different and also get to the Olympics. I don't think it dawned on me. It's been in the Olympics now for some time, so some 8 years, and we would have known about it before that. But the idea, representing your country is amazing. Getting sent away with the Wallabies is pretty cool. It's not pretty cool. It's bloody brilliant. And playing in front of packed houses is like something that you can't recreate in a lot of other things you do and have been so special. But the idea, at least, of getting sent away as an Australian cohort or team to represent your country in an Olympics, you're doing it with your swimmers and swimming's massive for Australia. Like we have quite a good success in swimming in the Olympics and everyone else and the great stories. It's like you're getting sent away as like a little mini percentage of the country to go and represent in a different, like as part of a bigger thing. And you could say it might sound similar as the Wallabies, and maybe it is, but it's just, I don't know. I grew up in a sporting household. Olympics is always on the telly when it comes around. Fond memories of the Sydney Games in 2000. So when this opportunity presented and you actually start thinking, oh God, I could actually be there and have an opportunity to win a medal, it's a pretty enticing thing when I have done something for so long. It's never entertained me up until, the idea of last year. I've been so hell-bent on trying to, be the best 15s player I could be and, team man I could be in that world and try and win some of the trophies that come along the way that way. But, that time does come to an end and this presented and it's exciting.
Yeah, no, mate, it's wicked. It's great for the profile of the sevens that you're there. Like, you're a superstar in the 15s games, Hoops. Like, just afar, I don't know whether we played against each other. I can't remember what we did back in the day. I'm going to say that I have. You could just say that you remember me, but I've not gone that far back.
Yeah,
when was your debut? Yeah, when was your debut?
2012.
Against Scotland, in Newcastle. Okay, right. So I was banned for that game. But if I would have went there, you probably would have won, to be honest. But I was banned for that game. I had a 12-week ban back in the UK in the Prem. So we would have crossed paths.
What did you do?
I stamped on an Australian, actually. I punched an Australian out of a stamp. I know, that was it. That was my legacy. So it was David Pace. If you were to YouTube me, Hoops, put my name in YouTube. There's no tries, okay? There's no big hits, but there's a big scrap compilation. And David Pace, who was the hooker for London Irish, got a bit of a slipper in and an uppercut, and that's my legacy. So that's why I missed that game in Newcastle. But we won, didn't we? Scotland won. Famous victory.
So it's a famous loss in Australia as well, because it was this 1 in 10 year storm came through Newcastle, I remember vividly just rocking up to the ground. It's almost as we rocked up to the ground, this just looming cloud just starts peeling over the side of this stadium and just whipping over. And then the game sort of had that eventual feel to it. But it was, I don't know if you remember, the two Scottish players that jumped over and collided heads after the victory and both split their heads after the game. So it was quite, I think it's more remembered for that than anything else.
I know. But the Alistair Strokos, Joe Ansbrough, to name drop the two. That was it. But it was a game made for Scotland in Newcastle. That was it. Like, yeah. I saw the rain. I was like, we're winning this without me.
Hell of a debut.
It was. Hoops, what's the lay of the land, right, in Australia with 15s at the minute? It seems, go back a little bit, maybe not now because it seems to have settled with Joe Smith there, but just give us a kind of snapshot of where Australian rugby is. It seems quite disjointed. There's been a few issues from your point of view, being in the heartbeat of that.
I have been in the heartbeat for so long, but with sevens, you are a little bit removed. I do a bit of commentary for Stan, so I'm Stan Sport out here. So I'm definitely watching the game and watching the players and everything like that. I think it's a really interesting moment for Aussie footy. It's China, it's working. How does it find a place in our landscape? I think is probably the main topic. We've got rugby league, which is so massive, Aussie rules, which is huge again, and then us. And, you know, the game is strong in the Southern Hemisphere and in the right areas, and that's without doubt. But where's its best fit? Where the best thing about rugby or rugby union, in my opinion, is the international game. So how do you bring that to the forefront as much as possible? Is it there a potential to align with Europeans? So, you know, does rugby union become a summer game in Australia? You know, how can that best be suited in terms of a playing and, you know, all that other stuff that I was just speaking about? That's, you know, probably for other people to talk more about, people really in the know of how all those sort of micro and macro things work within a sport and code, and, you know, who's going to bring viewers and, you know, how's it all work. But in terms of a player's mindset, last year was terribly disappointing for us all. It sucks to be in that position. You have such high hopes, and to put in so much work and effort and to just come up, you know, significantly short hurts. The one positive that you get out of this and is an absolute appetite to make sure that never happens again. So for a large part, I think the next coaching staff are in a really blessed position. And that position is you've got a bunch of players who are hungry to not repeat what's just happened. So in terms of motivation, like, great, that's a lot of that sorted for you. And I think that, and I am a total believer that Australia can produce a absolute world-class team. We've got the players, we've got the talent. So, you know, maybe not as much breadth and width of, or I know that's the wrong word, isn't it? It's the depth of talent that some nations do have. But in terms of a group of players that can do big things, I have no question that Australia is in that position. Good coaching. Right, yeah, I talked about motivation being sorted, having access to great facility all the time is pretty well sorted. So I think it's all there. It's just, you know, getting it all together.
Yeah, well, talking of getting it all together, I think there's only a few pockets around the world that have got it together. Ireland's a great example of they've got all their shit together. You can see how that transfers onto the pitch and what's coming through. France as well, the top 14, as crazy as they are, but they've got their shit together. It could be a cigarette in hand and a vino in the other hand, but they've got it together financially. And I say this because, right, I used to love watching Super Rugby, like back in the day when Larkham and Sharpie and all these lads were playing, Justin Harrison and all that, and when the Crusaders were strong. So I was used to watching it on TV in the morning, packed out stadiums, and then going to play club rugby over here in packed out stadiums. Yes, over here we've still got the packed out stadiums, but I'm watching the Super Rugby and the stadiums are empty. So the brand around that Super Rugby space isn't there anymore. And you made an interesting point where I'm in agreement with you. And the reason is there's loads of conversations here around Lewis Rees-Samit going to the NFL, and the reasons why I'd go to NFL, but apart from it being the NFL, there's a financial incentive. Then I piggyback that and say, well, I think players should be paid at the highest level, £1 million, UK pound. I know that's a lot more in Aussie dollars. And people are like, well, how can you do that when the club game's struggling and there's no fans in stadium? But you look at the international game, Hoops, you look at the World Cup, you look at the Bledisloe Cup. These are tribal, right? This is what big sports have, major sports. They have them rivalries. They have that jeopardy, and the stadiums are full.
It is a tough one. I bring up the idea of Super being moved to Super Rugby being moved to the same sort of window as what, even for us in Southern Hemisphere, but Japan. So Japan plays in your schedule. You know, they start a bit later in December. As you start, I mean, you guys kick off crazy, like August or September or something and run through the season. And then, you know, so I actually, you know, the more that someone talks to me about it, the more I go, well, why don't we align? And then our weekend, instead of, you know, Six Nations just running while, you know, even before Super Rugby starts, you know, we're well into our season. Maybe, you know, in that same window, the Rugby Championship's going on. So Australia playing New Zealand or South Africa or Argentina or whatever. And then, okay, I just finished watching that. It's 10 o'clock. Oh, you know what? In an hour or two, Scotland's playing England, you know, in this big Six Nations match. And all of a sudden, there's an absolute, you know, the multitude of content and the news stories that creates that, you know, say it is that Scotland-England game, you know, who are the two 10s playing out down there? And then Beauden Barrett at number 10 in you know, New Zealand just played the Aussie number 10. You know, so, oh my God, who's the best 10 in the world? And then this narrative of the world game is just getting absolutely spun in multiple places across the world. We're talking about it here. Every podcast is talking about it. You know, whatever stories, however the laws, and, you know, the laws are change and it frustrates people all the time, but also is a great talking point, how the laws shift and what teams best adjust to that shift. You know, how South Africa can win a World Cup with seven forwards on the bench and one back. Like, you know, so they arguably, you know, got it right for the time of rugby that is now. Could it have gone completely pear-shaped? Yeah, but, you know, these sort of narratives can just constantly be getting created if the world game was just completely aligned. And then after all of these seasons are done, Six Nations has played out, you know, Super Rugby's played out with the Rugby Championship, then you get this little mini tournament, which I was a huge, not huge, but I really didn't understand a couple of years ago when this stuff was being talked about.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sort of yearly ranking system, but you know, like you'll have a top international team at the end of the year and everything like that. Now I just see as a huge advantage that you could have this almost Super Bowl moment at the end of the year where, for argument's sake, Australia have absolutely nailed it and they're the number one team down in the south, and you know, Scotland, argument's sake, number one team up there in the north. You know, yeah, everyone's played each other, and here we go. We've got this absolute grand final, and it's going to be played. Who knows where it's going to be played, but probably in Europe because you get the eyeballs, and then this big thing is drummed up every year. Instead of, you know, there was that period there where New Zealand and England weren't even playing each other because there was disputes over who gets more take out of Twickenham Stadium. So, you know, we missed out a couple of years of seeing England, who were a really dominant force, I think, in the lead up to the 2019 World Cup, and New Zealand, who were doing their thing at that time. We missed out that challenge each year, whereas that shouldn't be the case when you've got, you know, your best two teams in the world not playing each other. So, again, this is stuff that's so above. I'm very much could all work, Hoops. You know. So
back of a fag packet, you've nailed it. But we are in a very good position to talk about it because we've been in it. You're still in it. You've captained your country. You know, like you watch other sports, you see the growth, you see the opportunity, you see how good they are. But you look at the other sports and NFL Super Bowl, you look at the big boxing events, you look at football, what the NRL do as well. We need bigger moments, and you've nailed it. So a crescendo of every season where the best of the best play each other. You could take it to Dubai, you could take it to America, you could take it wherever and commercially wrap your arms around that, build the storytelling that this is the moment. Every single year, this is the biggest moment. Yes, you've got the World Cup, we've got the Lions Tour interjected in between that. But I just think we need bigger moments because internationally, the game's never been stronger. You look at the World Cup, every single game was sold out, every corporate seat was taken. The rugby looked after itself, the jeopardy, the story. But you can't wait 4-year cycles for that. Like now the game can't wait for that. So I think building to that one crescendo, it could happen. The Hoops and Gyms game, we could nail it. We've nailed it.
Yeah, we started it. Yeah, it's all locked now. No, you're right. You bring the World Cups bring out a, you know, and it's that's, I guess, the other thing with what's cool about the idea of the Olympics. But you kind of pick up a second favorite team and you start supporting not only your team, but the game itself. And man, you like, you know, you think about, you know, I wasn't at the last World Cup, but going back to Japan, in 2019, you know, like Tonga were just a real threat and playing some really good footy, or Semi Radradra comes to you know, the Fijian team. How's he going to play? And all these sort of little storylines. So you start picking up all these sort of, rugby becomes a winner, not just, you know, national, you know, going supporting your team. Yeah, we'll go support the team. We'll, and I'm only going to go and support the team if it's, you know, my team playing, or if you get some, there's always a game that you'll go to and there's a, you know, a South's jersey or a Chiefs jersey or something like that turning up, which is always good. But, yeah, how do you get people just, you know, like you're saying, there's a game in Chicago, we're taking it to Chicago and it's going to be a full stadium because it's actually rugby that's just being celebrated. So, it'd be great. I like, from sitting back at home and watching the World Cup, the thing just looked unbelievable. And you just look at the strength and the love behind the actual game itself. It's amazing.
Hoops, I wanted to get into a bit of the weeds of stuff, if I may. I don't know how far you want to go into it because you are in a good headspace, it seems. But how tough was the World Cup for you personally? I know it's been asked around your relationship with Eddie and stuff, and watching the Australia team play as poorly as they did, I suppose, it just kind of shook rugby a little bit, I'd say. A couple of things that came out of that World Cup Australia-wise.
Oh, we've got a rich history in World Cups, you know, having you know, taking 91, 99 and a couple of finals as well, where it didn't come for us. You know, so I think to have a performance like that, you know, we have high expectations as a nation when we get into a World Cup. And, you know, I think that, you know, that whole scenario just was tough for the game here in Australia. These moments have a real opportunity to flip the game in another direction. And, you know, there's so much excitement going into this tournament, probably being the first real big tournament after COVID and everything. There was a lot of Australians who had, you know, saved up and packed up to go over there and see a performance. That was good. And, you know, unfortunately for, you know, and I'm a part of it, it just, you know, certainly over the last couple of years and leading into that tournament, it didn't come together for us. You know, and then a fallout and everything like that. It was tough to watch. There's a lot of my friends who are playing in the team, you know, so to be on ground, you know, on the ground over there, I know that was super tough, and everyone saw the pictures of how tough that is. And, you know, no one intentionally, I think, goes out with, you know, or a case of not trying hard or anything like that. And that's the worst bit, is you put in all this effort and all this expectation and everything like that. And for it to not, you know, to have that outcome is just the worst, because you put in all this effort and it still just doesn't come out. So, yeah, it was a tough one watching from home and feeling for all my mates over there.
Yeah. What about personally, with not going, and I didn't know the reason why. I didn't know whether it was because you chosen not to go, because I know you had a stand down period the year before. Yeah. But as captain, and the way that Eddie Jones is, he, you know, lives by the sword, dies by the sword, died by the sword. But how was that relationship, and how were you, like you mentioned, watching at home a lot of your mates there, but as a proud Australian, yeah, but also, you know, arguably you're still in your prime and captain at the time. Just give us an idea. I know you haven't gone too much into detail, but I'd love to kind of just see, now that you're in a good spot, how things were.
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah, I'd prepared for the last 4 years to be there. You know, from getting knocked out, we got knocked out against England by Eddie in the quarterfinal in 2019. And I was captain, and that was hugely disappointing. You know, again, Michael Cech is a great man, legend of a coach, and we'd really set ourselves up to perform better at that tournament. It doesn't come off, and we know that you know, quarterfinals is a tricky, tricky game to get through at a World Cup. You know, we saw that in France, but, you know, everything was sort of this, that was, I was going to, my birthday was the 29th of October, which was the World Cup final in Paris. And it just seemed poetic or yes. whatever you want to say that. Imagine, you know, you're like, imagine that being, you know, a game or a last game for a nation. So I had that in my head. It was a shock. I thought I was going. Like I was prepared to go and set my sights on that 29th of October situation. Look, I a lot of time to reflect, and you know, I haven't changed my tune on how I've approached this the whole time. Is I've been on the right side of selection, you know, largely my whole career, and I wasn't this time, and that was a decision made by you know, a coach and by Eddie. And I've been a captain who's had to make decisions with adverse effects on teammates and whatever that, you know, that you have to make a decision. So in that way, I kind of like, well, it's a decision that's made. And, you know, were there unfortunate circumstances leading into it? Yes, I got injured. So I played one game for Eddie and would have loved to have played some more and being able to be around the team more, because I don't think that, you know, my selection possibly would have occurred if I'd just been able to be around more. Now, I was fully prepared to, you know, absolutely roll everything I had into that World Cup, and also, you know, not like hold it too tight, and you know, and talk about that 29th of October as being this, you know, thing, but you know, let it play out and you know, do what I could do and you know, whatever. But it didn't happen. So, mate, like, what can you do? I don't have any resentment towards anyone. What do I think I could have, you know, I would have given an absolute crack if I was there, but, you know, it wasn't to be. So I'll move on.
Yeah. Are you happy to share how a conversation goes between a captain and a new coach that comes in to say you're not going? Because a lot of people were shocked, even on this side. You know, Eddie Jones has got history of coming in and doing crazy things, but he's also got history of backing older players or perceived older players. He came in and pressed the nuclear button. That's what it seemed like, and it obviously backfired. Do you mind just sharing how a conversation, like, if you're expecting to go, you have this dream in your mind of how it's going to unfold, it's probably your last World Cup, and it doesn't happen?
I mean, look, I won't go into detail of the conversation, but there's not a lot to go into. It's a situation where you won't be involved in the tournament. Stay ready. And I don't have to, you know, once someone's mind's made up, you know, it's kind of made up. And I didn't protest the fact. I got on my bike, and you know, I grieved for a bit, for sure, as you do. I was frustrated, but I turned that into motivation to be ready if I was needed, you know. And I was coming back from injury at the time, so I had something preoccupied to get back on the field. I would have been right for, you know, the trial against the French leading in to the World Cup, and I would have been you know, completely fine for our first round game. So that then took my motivation. But yeah, like, mate, what can you do? Like, it wasn't a discussion point, it was a decision. So, yeah,
absolutely. Well, I could see that it was tough as well, and I think the positive out of the World Cup for Australia is that they're at the point they are now. I talk about the nuclear butter being pressed by Eddie, but as a union, it's had to take a look at itself. And I wanted to ask this question, but where we can talk after about the direction of travel, but losing, and I'm going to say his name because I can, Mark Nwonganitawase. So he was a standout performer for Australia. I'm right in saying he's now gone to the NRL. Is that right? Is that confirmed?
Yeah, it's right.
It is, yeah. And that's probably off the back of the World Cup going poorly. What other decisions would have been in that mix for Australia to lose one of their hottest, youngest talents?
Oh, I don't know.
I know you're speaking for him here, yeah. But again, like, I'm just talking about big news that's here, but you're looking at the state, if they say the state of the game, the state of Australian rugby, the World Cup was that kind of tipping point. And then you're hearing, well, actually, there's talk of players leaving to go and play in a different, I know it's the same sport, but you know what I mean, like a different code.
Yeah, it's a weird one with a player like Markey, because he's a type of talent that can do a Sonny Bill, I think, can go and go and, you know, float into NRL for a couple of years, come back to Super. Like, you know, he's the closest thing I've seen in, you know, my team, certainly to an Israel Folau, in terms of just the athletic capability of this guy, the natural skill, can just, you know, it's, I think for someone like Markey, it's not really a, I'm going to league and I'll never see you again. Like, Markey's got Fijian heritage. There's, yeah, he will miss the Lions, but then there's a World Cup in 27 in our home country. So, you know, I think something like this, you know, potentially, you know, and certainly in Markey's world, might, you know, lift his profile. And certainly he's going to a club in NRL, which has some really great pedigree and coaches. So Trent Robinson's the coach there, who's, you know, it's one of the most successful clubs in the NRL. So he's going to go there, become a better player, pick up some really great skill. And certainly it's a bloody tough game, rugby league. So, you know, pick up at some, you know, more, I guess, feathers in his cap, and then come back. And, you know, I say he's going to come back, like he's definitely going to come back. But I think it's, you know, he's the type of player that can pop in and out. In terms of how you lose a player like that, and, you know, he doesn't stay around in the fold, it's a tough one, man. Like, it, you know, there's so many factors to this, you know, where how much money's free, you know, how much money's another club offering, what's the potential, and who's talking to who, and everything like that. So I wasn't involved in those conversations, but I like to think that Markey's someone who is a good enough skill set that can just come back, and it's not a definitive see you later.
Will it be about money as well? Do the NRL pay more for them to be on the roster there?
No. I mean, both games have good amounts of money. Just where are they going? And sometimes, you know, there's an element of luck sometimes in a contract. You just get freed, the money gets freed up at the right time, someone's off contract, and then it's tough to move around. I mean, that's my understanding of it. But, yeah, I think it's a real shame to see Markey go. He could be, you know, in terms of he could be 13, 14 or 15 easily and do all three well. And he was, yeah, outstanding at the World Cup.
No, he really was. What are you making of the Kiwi coaches coming in? I know you've had history of having them in before, but he's one of the greats, isn't he, in Joe Smith? I've just seen as well, just flick up when I was in bed scrolling this morning before the interview, another Kiwi coach, don't know his name, has come across as well. But how has that been received in Australia? How are you as ex-captain, future captain of the Wallabies, with him in charge?
I've been nothing but impressed with the way Joe's been going out. I've run into him a couple of times in the building, in RA, and you know, he's got a really good idea of how he wants to put the program together. He's really excited about the opportunity, sees the talent that's in Australia, has come from a place with you know, implementing some really great structure and being around some great players. So I think in terms of that, it's super exciting. He's yeah, Mike Cron's the Kiwi you're mentioning. Some of the best pedigree you've got in coaching there. And then also Laurie Fisher, who's one of Australia's greater coaches as well, in the breakdown contact areas and forward areas. So he's amassing a really nice, good squad of coaches. And, you know, I think our players deserve that.
Yeah. And where does that leave you? You're allowed to say you're still keen? You've still got the appetite? Have you said that's it for me at 15?
I don't know. I haven't closed the door or anything. Mate, you know what it's like when you start thinking about the idea of playing in front of a full house for your country. You can't not think, oh, you know, what could it look like? But for now, there's nothing to say that I will be. I know that I've got this lined up for the next 6 months. The body feels actually surprisingly pretty good, despite all this running and stupid stuff that I'm doing at the moment. But I don't know where it's going to take me. I'm really enjoying my rugby at the moment, which is a great thing.
Well, the incentive's there, isn't it, with the Lions coming down? Like, it's so big, isn't it? And I suppose from this side, Hoops, people would be wondering whether or not Australia can compete. And just listening to you and talk about Joe and the coaching team that he's putting together and the appetite for that tour, What do you say to that when people say, can Australia compete with the Lions in just over a year?
So I guess starting from the beginning of your question, it was only my second year in international colours when the Lions came down in 2013. So like we spoke about, debuted 2012, 2013, they come down. And the way the season's structured here is like you'd play half your Super Rugby and then do this three test matches and then go back to Super Rugby. And to have like a tournament or the three games of that magnitude just sort of dripped into the middle of your Super Rugby season seemed, just a little bit, not as grand as what it could be. I went to the 2001 Lions game in Sydney as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, and that was amazing. Still have great fond memories of that. And then 2013, I just didn't recognize the sheer scale of what the Lions is coming down. And I guess the exciting thing about this one is the last was COVID affected. So my hope as an Aussie fan and player is that, your Lions supporters are bloody excited to spend some money and get down to Australia. And watch a series that I think will be competitive. Like I mentioned to you, there is a level of hunger here amongst the players that can do nothing but breed quality. The in-house competition and fighting for spots is what makes, I think, you get players rising to another level. So when you've got, two sevens or three sevens, even better, fighting over one position, you're going to get a massive jump if there's only one or two people competing that can both fit into the squad. So, part of the, I think, challenge now in the lead up to that is creating as much depth as you can in each position. And then those positions can then be going head on head as much as possible. So you're not just getting a player at his potential. You're getting something above it because that competition's breeding, a better player than what you would have had otherwise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it will be competitive.
Yeah, and you've got big Will Skelton as well. I played with him at Saracens, sat next to him, got run over by him by a few times, but he's a special talent as well. As you've got some really gifted players still within your squad, right?
Yeah. No, there's plenty, mate. There's plenty.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we're shooting forward, but just the World Cup as well. Like, is it the Lions first, then World Cup, or is this a big build-up at home towards the World Cup and you being host of that again? Because it was epic in 2003, everything that goes with that.
Yeah, there's two ways to look at it as the home nation, and I think saw it a bit with the French last year being, arguably the form team with Ireland going into the tournament. It creates... It creates a pressure, but a pressure that can have two very different effects on a team. One is the overwhelming pressure that it just, go, oh my God, we better do well here. And that can be, compress a team, or it can be, you can feel that sort of natural push behind you and the wind in the sails and really let the club go type of thing that, hey, this is ours and we can really let rip on this. So, for that to happen, I think there needs to be some success and some really positive stories within Australian rugby into that time. No better than, having a successful Lions series, for the players to realize that, oh yeah, actually, we are a team that can perform and can perform under the lights. And, that then breeds a way of doing things that rolls into a home World Cup that allows you to do really well. If you look at 2003, the Wallabies had won in 2001 against the Lions. They'd won the 99 World Cup. They'd won the Bledisloes, I think, definitely leading into that. So the team knew about success and knew about, what it took for them to get to that point. So, and then that 2003 World Cup turns into we could win it in our backyard. How bloody good would that be? Not, oh my God, it's in our backyard. I hope we do well. And they're two very different ways of thinking. So, I think it's chicken and the egg, but need to get some runs on the board soon.
Yeah. Now we've built up this narrative, Hoops, just give us an idea of what is the motivation as an Australian when it comes to rugby. So everything that you've been through, the success, the highs, the lows, like as you come out of this, where does the motivation lie for this brilliant nation of yours for rugby union?
I think motivation's different for everyone. It's hard for me to say it's different for, it's the same. I think some people really identify with it's, they have the ability to represent their community and their, group within Australia. And some people just want to be the best player they can be. And some people grew up watching the Wallabies and, they had every trophy in the cabinet. And they want to return it to that stature and that level and, be a part of that rebuild and be the people that, are going down, the main streets in the double-decker bus and getting the ticket tape, that sort of thing. I think there's all varying different motivations, none of them right or wrong, but getting that in a circle and, utilising all that energy into one big melting pot and making it work is the challenge. And that's why I think, we've seen, results of win, 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 loss, 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 win, win, loss, 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 loss throughout and the inability to get that real consistency because it's a hard one to really nail down. But it can be done. No question. Like we've talked about, it's got the players, it's got the, we're in a good competition to do it. You're playing the Kiwis all the time. The Fijians are now doing good things with the Fijian Drua in the tournament. There's nothing there. There's no reason why not. It's just making it happen.
Class. Right, last question. Your former partner in crime, the great David Pocock as well. I've been messaging him back and forth. He's doing all right, isn't he? If you call politics all right.
Mate, it's not a surprise to anyone that I think knew him well enough, the big Dave. He has always had this sort of, thing going on in the side and, I'm very happy for him that he's gone and, doing stuff that's important to him and his people and who he represents. So,
What was the thing on the side?
The political slant, right? He wasn't just always out there pilfering balls and doing like some people probably thought. He had a lot going on and some important stuff, that he wanted to make significant change. So, great for Dave to be, doing. I'd love to sit and chat with him about politics. I wonder how different it is from where he's come from. It would be interesting, but he's a good man.
Has he been well received there because of the sport and the way that he played? Is that a thing or not? I don't know how sports and politics, you don't really combine the two. I'm not really allowed to talk about politics here as much as I'd love to, considering the Wi-Fi shite, and politicians for that.
Yeah, it's probably the same way here, mate. No comment.
Yeah, absolutely. The great Michael Hooper, mate, it was awesome to have you. When I'm over in Australia, I'd love to connect properly, mate, and we'll do this properly where you're meant to do it as humans. But for now, I'll watch you breathing through a Calippo straw at the weekend playing in Hong Kong. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Absolutely, Jim. Thanks, mate. Thanks for your time and having me on.
And if Hooper knows Legend.
What's going on, the Wallabies will be strong and they'll live on.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.